What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents, you may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's, actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it, because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico, because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
More than I, it's the club. It's me, your host, Phil Casey. It is the club, brought to you in association with the Pitch Sport Football fan app, giving the fans a voice, where you can get your free download of the app on the App Store and on the Google Play Store. We continue on with our look back at the World Cups while we've no real football to talk about, and Gav has done all the talking about transfers and jerseys and all that type of shite as well. So tonight we've got a scaled down crew. There's just three of us to talk about it. There's myself, there's Keith Plunkett, and of course there's Gav Doyle, the host of everything else. We were meant to have other lads in, but due to the fact that none of them gave a shite, they didn't bother to turn up. So here we are. So Keith, how are you?
Good and yourself?
I'm world class.
Excellent.
Felix Zidane's left peg here at this moment in time. That's how I'm rocking.
Could you feel better?
If I had Ronaldo's right peg, I'd be as happy now. I'd be the happiest man alive. Gav, have you along. I heard that this is your specialist subject, is it?
When you told me earlier, I tried my best to get out of this, I'm going to be honest with you. And I said, lads, listen, I'll step out, let Dicko win and do it. And then Dicko came along and said, lads, I broke my laptop. And I said, does that mean I have to do the pod? And Phil said, yeah. So I just Wikipedia'd this World Cup. Because all I can remember is a fella headbutting a fella and chipping a penalty that hit the bar and went in. That's all I can remember.
Talk about that all night.
You know, so. But I have Wikipedia open. So look, I'm trying my best.
Well, don't tell anyone you've got Wikipedia open, because I'm going to go in and edit some of the stuff in Wikipedia now. We'll see how many people really listen carefully, right? We just make stuff up. I'll throw stuff in from the 70 World Cup and everything.
No, I'm using Wikipedia for the simple reason is it just jogs me memory. You know, there's been so many tournaments, like literally before we come on here, we are going, isn't this the one where Henry handled the ball and all the Irish lads were down inside the French embassy giving out loads? And I was like, no, I don't think it is, lads. So that's how... You know, that's how they get thrown around in your mind as the years go on. So I've looked up a little bit and I have been reminded of stuff already. So we're good to go. I won't let you down.
I have to say, I always get excited when a World Cup comes around. And anyone who's listened to the podcast over the years will know from the 2000 and how many World Cups have we done? We've done 2014 and 2018. They're the two World Cups we've done since we've been doing the podcast, right? I'm not talking about the ones we've covered, but in the real ones, right?
Yeah.
And normally, I've robbed all the songs that represent the teams and stuff and used them before and everything, because I get really up for it, right? But it's really strange, because I wasn't on last week because of trying to edit that podcast we did with Trev and everything like that, which I'm still trying to edit. But, like, these World Cups now, 6, 10, 14 and 18. Like, if somebody played a match from any of them, I wouldn't know which World Cup it was outside of looking at the names of the stadiums. Yeah. Whereas all the other World Cups before that, so 2002, 98, 94, 90, and I even remember 86.
Yeah.
They were visually,
Yeah, they're all very distinctive and all very visually different. This, to me, is sort of the first of the bland ones. Or not, when I say bland, I mean it's just visually, they all look the same at this stage.
Yeah, it's all homogenised, isn't it, by this one? And I agree 100% with you. And what Gav was saying there, it's like this one and 2010 might as well be the same tournament. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to nearly differentiate between the two of them. And I agree with that. Like, what you said there, 1990, I don't know if it's cameras and all that sort of thing. Everything about them was just, you'd see a clip of it and you'd know straight away, 94 World Cup, France 98. Whereas these ones, you're like...
I think it's the Germans, lads. It's just German efficiency. They get everything right. No, well, genuinely it is. It's the two things that strike me about looking through this World Cup, what you're saying is right. It is probably the first World Cup where, you know, South Korea and Japan, the one previous was, you know, oh, it's South Korea and Japan, it's just something different, you know, that way. And of course, you had the Saipan incident and you had loads of stuff going on that World Cup. It was a brilliant World Cup, I thought. But this one was where they all start kind of molding into each other. You know, I'm trying hard to differentiate between, you know, this one and say, even Euro 2008. Where was it? Yeah. Was it the fuck was that on?
That was Portugal, wasn't it?
No, Portugal was 2004, wasn't it?
Who knows?
2008, I think it might have been Holland and Belgium. Yeah, 2010 was South Africa, which was a difference again, because it was in Africa. But again, you're trying to think around it. It's German efficiency, but the first thing that hopped out at me when I looked at the groups was, this is probably the first World Cup that I can remember where really top seeds were top seeds, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was, like, I think there's one group in this where I think Argentina and Holland are in together, but other than that, you're looking through it and you're like, you know, Germany topped their group as hosts, and they've Ecuador and Poland, and there's groups there, like, even England, you know, I think they've Sweden, Portugal, Mexico, Angola, and Iran, you know. Yeah, like, so it was probably the first World Cup where I thought, these are just nailed on top seeds here. There's going to be, it's the first one where I thought FIFA just went, all the best teams, lads, in the last 16, and we're going to take no risks about it.
Here, Keith, on that, like, you know, it's almost like because at this stage, and I suppose this goes back to the point about the force of the bland World Cups, this is, at this point now, we have a clear separation in world football. It's Europe and the Champions League is the pinnacle of the sport. And international football is very much now a second-class brother to what that is, right? And although we still get excited because it's like it's 4 weeks of non-stop football, that real, as Gav says, that idea that everyone was the teams were relatively equal doesn't exist anymore, because you've got your Italy, you've got your Germany, you've got your Spain, you've got your France, you've got your Holland, you've got all these powerhouses that represent the key leagues in Europe, which feed all the teams in the Champions League, and this is now panned out in international football.
Yeah, at this stage, there's surprise elements. All right, this World Cup had got a lot of African teams that had sort of come out of nowhere and made their debuts or whatever, but the Europeans were, the Champions League was in a golden period. All right, we just won the Champions League the year before, but the English teams were a force at this stage. The Italians were still a big draw, and it was the haves and the have-nots really in this World Cup. Was there a group of death in this? I don't think there was.
When you look through it, like, Switzerland and France are paired together after both coming out of the group that Ireland were in, ironically, in qualifying. And then the other one is Holland and Argentina. Everything else, like Italy, as we go on to talk about them at length later on, they've Ghana, the Czech Republic, and United States. You know, the kind of way, I think Brazil are in a group with Australia, Croatia, and Japan. Croatia weren't the force that they are now. Australia were just, you know, unknown. Not unknown in the world of football, but they hadn't done anything in the world of football of no. You know, and just scrolling through them here, like, you're looking going, like, Spain. Tunisia, and Saudi Arabia. You know, the kind of way.
Yeah. The only real group, though, then is the Argentina, Ivory Coast, Holland, and Serbia group.
Yes.
Because that's essentially the old Yugoslavian side. You've got Holland. You've got the Ivory Coast, which is like has emerged as a powerhouse in Africa at this stage. Who are the lads that were playing for the Ivory Coast? Because they're all big Chelsea players and Arsenal players.
You had Solomon Kalou, Drogba. You would have had.
Kouré brothers.
Yeah. Way.
all those, and they were playing at the top end of the Premier League. And like, then you've got Argentina, of course, who has all the geniuses. Is this Messi's fourth World Cup, or did he miss this?
He's in the squad in this one. He's only 18. I don't think he sees much.
I don't think he does. I think this is one where he's sitting on the bench, and like, I think the Argentinians are calling for him all the time. You know, that type of thing. It was a bit similar to Diego in 82, wasn't it? Yeah, before he goes and dominates the World Cup in 86, and it was a real case of waiting for the king to arrive, and from an Argentinian perspective. Who was their main man? Well, Mascherano was there. Saviola was obviously playing at that stage. Cambiasso, I think, was their big player in this tournament.
He was just,
yeah. Kelme, you've got Tevez, and for me, like, when you look back, you've got Maxi was unbelievable in this. When you look back at these, though, this is like, when you think about it, these lads are quite recent players, so it's not like when we talk about 90 and 94, it seems so distant. We all have memories of these lads either playing for teams that Liverpool played against, or even playing for Liverpool. Like, you know, you think about Heinze at this stage, there's the whole thing about Liverpool want to sign him and being at United and all that shite that went on. You've got Mascherano. We were trying to sign Saviola for about 400 years. You've got Hernan Crespo, who obviously scored against us in 2005 as well. So all these, like, when I look back at, like, you're not looking at lads going, who are they? Or, you know, I don't remember him at all. You know the players that were involved in this. And I suppose it's also the advent of 24/7 television. Right, look, we won't go as much deep into it, because I'd like to get this done a bit quicker than we've done on the previous World Cups in terms of what it was, right? But, going into this, right, we've got, who are the holders? Brazil are the holders. Yeah. We've got another powerful Brazil attacking force. You've got Ronaldo, who's sort of on the wane at this stage. You've Adriano, you've Ronaldinho, and
Robinho was in around it as well, wasn't he?
Robinho was in around it as well, and it's the in terms of what it is. And they were one of the top seeds to expected to do well. And there was this question about, I don't know, had a South American side still hadn't won in Europe at this stage. Would I be right?
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah. I think, if you go through them, like...
Yeah, Brazil won it in America. Argentina won it in Mexico. Argentina won it in Argentina. Yeah, that's probably right.
And Brazil won it in South Korea and Japan.
Yeah, Brazil won it in Sweden in 58.
That's the last time that was the last time in
the last time a non-European side hadn't won a European World Cup, if you know what I mean. I think that was the fact around
And are we coming off the back of, this is post the Greece now, or is that, I don't know when the fucking, that's
Greece. No, Greece had won the European Championships in 2004.
And not qualified for this, isn't that right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they missed out on qualification for this. And Cameroon and Nigeria had also missed out on this, despite them having been representing the World Cups up previous to this and being the big African sides that were there as well.
It was a big change for Africa because, yeah, you're right, two-way stalwart of the last few years, Cameroon and Nigeria, and then were replaced with Ghana, Togo, Angola, Ivory Coast, all making their first tournament. So it was a big change from that point of view.
Okay, so, and this was also there was more, I remember when this was awarded, this tournament being awarded to Germany, because it was all the thing, they wanted to have a tournament in Africa, and there was a vote and controversy around this, that they just managed to get over the line. South Africa and them were level, I think, after the second round of voting.
Yeah, the way the voting went was four countries went for it. It was Germany, South Africa, England and Morocco. And after round one, I think England were really hopeful of getting this.
And England thought they were getting it. I remember after 96.
Yeah, I remember at the time England were really, really hopeful of getting it. And after the first round, they were gone. You know, Germany had 10 votes, South Africa had 6, England had 5, Morocco were out of running. And you're right, though, in the second round of votes, both Germany and South Africa are on 11 votes, and by the third round, Germany win it by one vote.
Mm.
And there was bribery and corruption allegations.
All over the shop.
Everywhere. Like, just mad, like, you know.
You've got lads.
Let me read a thing here, right? Accusations of bribery and corruption had marred the success of Germany's bid from the very beginning. On the very day of the vote, a hoax bribery affair was made public, leading the cause for a revote. Well, you hear this. On a night before the vote, German satirical magazine Titanic sent letters to the FIFA representatives offering joke gifts like, wait for it, cuckoo clocks and Black Forest ham in exchange for that vote for Germany. This is what was going on. You know, mad stuff like there was Oceania delegate Charlie Dempsey, who was initially backed England, had then been instructed to support South Africa follow England's elimination. He abstained, saying there was too much pressure on him. You know what I mean? Let me see, Sepp Blatter, who favoured the South African bid, would have to cast the deciding vote, and then Germany get it. Like, he's supporting South Africa, he gets to cast the vote, and Germany end up with it. You know what I mean? Mad stuff.
You could do a show on it on your own about that, couldn't you? Every World Cup are talking about the corruption, but the more Sepp Blatter is getting involved, it's getting so blatant and so clear, the amount of crap that goes on. Madness.
Yeah, lads, onto the group stages, right? And we can probably whiz fairly quickly through, because going back to what Gav said, outside of the Brazil group and probably having a quick discussion around the Holland group, and actually the France group is an interesting one as well. The rest is more or less how you'd expect it to go. Spain walloped through the group. They win 4-0, 3-1, and 1-0 against Ukraine and then Tunisia and then to be fair, if they're not getting out of that group like that, but like the Ukraine come out second, that was your man the Farmer was in goal for him. Remember the big, huge, curly-headed fucker who was, I think he played in goal, is still playing in goal for him at the moment for the Ukraine.
Was he not the fella that was like massively rated?
Yeah. No, that you're thinking about the Russian guy.
I'm thinking of the Russian fella, sorry.
That never makes a mistake until he was on television.
Yeah.
Which happened to be every time he was on television.
Then his arms fell off.
Is your man's name the was he Denisov or?
Shakovsky.
Doesn't ring a bell, but he had a big, huge, curly Muppet head that he played in goal. Could have been him. Keeper. Yeah. No idea. So that was relatively straightforward. I think Italy's group, they had Ghana in that. So Ghana were the sort of surprise African team in this, because the Ivory Coast don't get out of the group, which we'll come to now in a second, right? But Ghana come out of a group with Czech Republic and the US, and the US were heavily tipped in this, if you remember, because they'd done all right. Obviously, they'd done really well in 94. They'd done all right in 2002 as well. And everyone thought they were going to do some damage in this one. And instead, they got hammered in their opening game. And then they drew Italy in the second game and then got stuffed by Ghana in the last game.
Yeah, beaten 2-1 by Ghana in a game that was like, if they'd have won, they'd have got out of the group if they'd have won.
Yeah.
You know, Ghana actually, it was a winner takes all nearly in that, because Ghana and United States go into that on, I think Ghana are on a point. Ghana are on, end up Ghana with 6 points. Yeah, but they go in with 3-1. You know what I mean? They end up with 6 points if they go through. But like again, just looking through the groups, there's a couple of groups where you go, okay, there's two half decent sides in it, who'll finish first and second, like Switzerland and France, you know. But there's nothing there where you're going, oh, that's a surprise, you know. Maybe Australia getting out of the group ahead of Croatia. Maybe, but
this is the mad group, because Australia may have not have gotten out of this, right? They play Japan, and there was controversy over the goal the Japanese score. Were they awarded a penalty, or Schwarzer goes mental because he gets impeded in the build up to the goal or so, right? And the referee is Saudi Arabian, I think, right? And afterwards, he's rumored to have said to him, God smiled at him today because he made up for the mistake that I made, right? And they come back and they win 3-1. But in it, he was impeded. Schwarzer was flagged or fouled, was convinced he was fouled in the build, but it turned out that the defender, who was your man, the fellow that played in England?
Lucas Neal.
Like literally threw the Japanese player into Schwarzer. If somebody goes back, it's like a fella playing rugby. He just picks him up and throws him against Schwarzer, right? Schwarzer goes down in a heap and the ball then is bundled over the line by a Japanese player, right? There's more going on. But then Australia going to win that one 3-1. And then they draw with Croatia. And I think because the Croatia game is a winner takes all.
Yeah.
But that's the game that has one of the standout moments in this tournament for me.
Yeah.
Because Graham Paul and obviously the English ought to be an all-English officiating team managed somehow to award 3 yellow cards to Simunic in that game.
Was it that game or was it a knockout game?
No, it was that game.
Yeah. He gives Šimunić the fourth yellow card in the 64th minute, and then he gave him the second one in the 90th minute, and his third one in the 93rd minute.
And it has it on Wikipedia on the match thing, three cards beside it. It's madness.
Yeah. So that was the thing, but that was a winner takes all for those. Well, it wasn't. If Australia drew, they went through. If Croatia won, they went. They would have gone to 4 points, and Australia would have been on 3 points. But like. Apart from that, though, Brazil basically romp home in this. They beat Croatia 1-0. That was the only tight game they had in the whole bloody thing. Then they thump Australia 2-0. But this is Ronaldo scoring goals again, and they've got Adriano before, obviously, drink wrecks his career.
Yeah.
And then Ronaldinho's on fire in this tournament as well.
Kaká
as well, yeah. Like, you know, when you look at that Brazilian team, now looking back at it, you're going, how did they not win the World Cup? Do you know what I mean? Because I'd argue that was a stronger team than the 2002 team that did win the World Cup.
I don't know. I think the 2002 team was probably better myself. But yeah, it's not a bad team here. It's Dida in goal. He was a bit shite now, in fairness.
Everyone says that Dida was a top goalkeeper for it. The reason why we think he's a bit shite is because of what happened in 2005. But he comes back and wins the Champions League in 2007. Right? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
So, but in general, I just thought he was a flaky keeper, to be honest. But then again, who was the keeper in 2002? Marcos, I think, was the keeper for them. And who remembers Marcos? You know what I mean? So yeah. Those Brazilian keepers were famous for just being non-entities, really, just standing back there, wouldn't he? I suppose Dida was probably the most famous one.
Well, Rogério Ceni, who's his substitute in this, is, of course, the legend who takes penalties and free kicks and scores 150 goals.
Has he got small feet?
No, he was a freak.
All right.
He had big feet. But Julio César is the backup keeper to Dida. And yeah, people will probably argue across the course of his career, Julio César seemed to be a more solid keeper than Dida. But, like, I'd say Dida was class as well. But, like, that, you've got the fellas who've come through from the 2002 World Cup. You've still got Lucio there. You've still got Cafu. You've got then Roberto Carlos is still there. But their midfield has sort of changed around from what was theirs. And this is the one they have Juninho from Leon in this one. And you've got Gilberto Silva is in this. This is the he was playing for Arsenal.
Yeah, but we also had Zé Roberto and Emerson in midfield. And that was a solid midfield as well. You know, Emerson was a good player back then. Zé Roberto as well had really powerful enough midfielder. But like you look back at it and you think, oh, he was a bit shit. But when you think about it at the time, they were good players. Do you know what I mean? They were good players in a great team.
Yeah, they were, but they romped through this group. How many goals is, I think, let me see, how many goals does Ronaldo have on this? He probably has about 10 million goals, does he? No, he obviously doesn't score too many because of what goes on afterwards, but they won 3-1, 2-2. Does he get two goals in this one? I think he looks odds on to be coming definitely in the reckoning for the Golden Boot again, which would have been something doing had he managed to secure Golden Boot three tournaments in a row.
He
only got two in the group, but I think he gets two more in the knockout stages as well, which leaves him with four. And not to give the game away, but closer wins it on five. So that's one. It's a pity because he would have had such a legacy had he won three Golden Boots on the spin.
The players look to the captain. The captain looks to the manager. And the manager looks to you. It's time to be heard. Pitch is the new app that gives football fans the voice you deserve. Get your views sent straight to media pundits, commentators on the club you love. From dodgy penalties to rating match performance, make your opinion count.
The manager's looking to sub him off, and the fans agree.
Download the Pitch app for free today. Be heard.
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents, you may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Right, look, we go to the tie group, which is Holland, the Holland, Argentina, Ivory Coast, and Serbia group, right? The Serbian team is full of players that we all recognise as well. The Ivory Coast team is full of players that we all recognise. I guess going into this, people would have had Ivory Coast as dark horses in terms of what they could potentially do with such powerhouses in the group as Holland and Argentina. Because this is a heavy, heavy, what's the word, the Premiership and French laden Ivory Coast side.
Yeah, very much so. Very much like, so.
Well, you've got like what you've a bit away from Arsenal. You've got
Colo.
You've got Drogba, Chelsea. You've got Colo, and you've got is Yaya in that squad? Is he?
Yeah, yeah. He played in the first game against Argentina.
He had this was his breakout tournament. If I'm right in thinking so, because he was at Olympiacos at that stage. So this is his breakout moment. You've got Colo Touré, you've got Yaya Touré, you've Didier Zakora. I remember Didier Zakora.
He played for Spurs
for a good while. Aruna Coney. Was he at Everton or something? Or Wigan? Was it Wigan? They're both the same. Then you've Drogba. Like, it's mad that Drogba doesn't do much, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back to just on like, because a lot of people listening will be looking to see what we thought of England in this, and I'm looking through the England squad and I'm thinking, Jesus, like, they had a really good side again. You know what I mean?
It's all the time.
Neville, Cole, Gerrard, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, you know, Beckham, Lampard, Rooney, Owen, Joe Cole, who at the time was on top form. You had Sol Campbell that was still around. You had David James, your backup goalkeeper. Carragher was there, Hargreaves. You know, Michael Carrick, Crouch is there. Walcott is only young and gets into the squad. And I'm trying to think back to it, and again, there's just like you're saying there about Brazil. How did you not win the World Cup? Is this the end of the English so-called golden generation?
What's the 2010 of the golden
generation? Yeah, I think
10. I don't know. I think they went into 2010. They always go in thinking they can do loads, but I thought between say 2002, 2004, 2006, I think that was, because you don't qualify for Euros 2008, don't you know? And I think those three tournaments was where they felt, you know, and Ericsson is at the helm, I think, for all three, and they're thinking, this is it for England. But just again, like, they just flatter to deceive in this tournament. It's mad. And, you know, I suppose you could probably say it for a couple of teams in this, you know, like you're talking about some of the African sides there and how good they were. But when you look through the squads like of teams that go out relatively early in the competition, despite having easy enough groups, it's just mad to watch. Like, it really is. Like, England again, you look at that squad going, I think they make the last 16, do they? Quarter final, that's it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's mad. Like, it's mad to watch.
The whimper, you know, it's
they make the quarter final. But like, you look at this group, the Dutch Argentina group, right? Like, the Argentina thing is loaded. Like, again, here's another story that's absolutely loaded in this World Cup, right? Maybe with the exception of the goalkeeper, which is...
Well, I was going to say, right, Abbondanzieri is the goalkeeper there. I could do a six-hour pod on the state of Argentinian goalkeepers, because they win the tournaments, and you spoke the last time, Phil, I think you mentioned about Roa was sent off to see the end of the world and all, a year after being in the World Cup. You know, some absolute shooting goal for them. Since they won the World Cup in 86, Neri Pumpido, I think, was the keeper for that one. And it's injured in 1990. Goyke Chea comes in, has a bit of a Indian summer that year. But other than that, the keepers have been absolute muck every single tournament. Even up until the most recent ones, the keepers are absolute dirt. But their squad, that team, the Argentina team, we say it every time we do a show like this. Bodiso, Ayala, Heinze, Sorin, Maxi, Mascherano, Cambiasso, Riquelme, Saviola and Crespo. That was their team against the Ivory Coast. They brought on Palacio, Lucho Gonzalez and Pablo Aimar. That's quality all over that.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming them now on them going out or anything, but...
You are though, Keith. Let's be honest about it.
I'm trying to do a six-hour pod on how bad he is, so I must be blaming him in some way.
But like, you look at this, and this Dutch side who tops the group, they come second in the group. The level of points, I think it's down to goals scored or something like this. This is a mad Dutch side. You know the way we've seen the other Dutch sides where they have like world class players and everything. This is one of these ones where we all know the players, but are any of them world class? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you've got defense was all over the shop. You had, wasn't it, Van Bronckhorst? There was Boularouz was in this defense. You had. Who will ever forget the legend of Jan Kronkamp? He was a Liverpool player at that stage as well. And then you've got Babbel, you've got Schneider, you've got Mark van Bommel. He was going around kicking lads all over the shop. You've got Van Persie's in this. You've got Johnny Huitinga. I remember him. But did he play for Celtic? Raphael van der Vaart.
I played for Everton.
You've got Van der Vaart. You've got Ian Robin. You've got Ruud van Nistelrooy. You've got Cocu. You've got Dorkhout. And you've Giovanni van Bronckhorst. Like, they're all...
It's another squad where you look and go, what's going on here? Do you know what I mean? Like, we get onto it in the knockout stages. They go out in the round of 16.
That's three. Van Persie, Van Nistelrooy and Robin. You know what I mean? Like, that's blading. That's mustard. But then that two centre-backs are Andre Ujjard and Joris Matthijssen.
Yeah.
Couldn't pick them out of the lineup.
No. But like, again, just it's mad. This group, anyway, there's two and fro. And I think, though, Holland and Argentina both come out on 7 points each. So to get two wins and a draw, was the draw them with themselves, between the two of themselves? Yeah, they drew nil all in the last game. So they more or less had it wrapped up. They're on 6 points each, weren't they, going into it? The only one who could catch them was the Ivory Coast. No, they couldn't. Sorry, I tell a lie, because they'd both beaten the Ivory Coast. So nobody could catch them, and it was a bit of a dead rubber, and it played out that way. This was the one Argentina thumped Serbia 6-0, and that was the result that gets them over the line in this, because they have eight goals 4-1 against in three games. And the best bit here, Keith, is unlike the Russian lads in 94, that nobody ends up as top scorer of the tournament from that Argentina side. Like, you're thinking, if a team scores 6 goals in a World Cup, that the centre forward in that team is going to end up with the golden boot.
Hat-trick.
Yeah. No. Yeah, has to. Who scored? It must have been a lot of different scores.
Maxi got two. He got a blading beauty in this one, didn't he? Volley.
That's right.
Cambiasso got one. Or did Cambiasso get a beauty as well, actually, wasn't it? Was that the goal of the tournament? Crespo.
I think it was the goal of the tournament. You're right. And then Crespo and Tevez gets one. And Messi gets one.
Yeah, at the end.
Comes on. And Messi comes on the 75th minute and scores one the 88th. Like, that's mad, isn't it? He scored goals in 2006. Little 18-year-old Messi. Yeah.
Has he not just appeared in the Champions League final, though, win over Arsenal Stade de France, wasn't he? He was just breaking through at Barcelona. That was his breakthrough season, I think.
That was his fourth full season.
Because Ronaldinho was still there, and Ronaldinho at the time was questioned about what will happen when you leave Barca, and he's like, the king is waiting. Like, you know, he's raving over Messi. He's like, don't give up. Like, let's be honest, Ronaldinho probably didn't give a bollocks. You know, I'm leaving, like, you know, I'll head off to Rio and go on the lash. That's just what Ronaldinho does. But, you know, this is Messi's kind of breakthrough season, I think, for Barcelona. And then, obviously, it's his first World Cup. And a lot's being made of Messi's career in World Cups. But like, there's one thing trying to drag a side through, but when you're trying to drag a whole fucking squad through the World Cups he's tried to do it in, I don't think it's any how do I put it? It's no reflection on Messi as a player when you see what's happened to him in World Cups, when you look at some of the stuff he's had to play with, to be honest with you.
It's annoying when people use it as a stick to beat him with, isn't it? Yeah. That I wasn't able to carry Argentina again. I'll do a 6-hour pod on the state of goalkeepers during his fucking international career. And you being able to do better.
But like, you look at this, and you know, the two best teams by far come out in Holland. But like, all the other lads, the Serbian teams have loads of lads that you recognised. As you're saying, the Ivory Coast team had loads of lads we recognised. It's just mad that, you know, that Holland and Argentina just walk over and you're just looking at them going, how did these teams not win the World Cup? I enjoy thinking more about how did they not win the World Cup when you look at the squads that are in there. It just shows you the football can show up surprises every now and then. Right, we haven't covered...
But I think, Phil, we're saying that a lot. Like, how didn't they win? But what happens is, when they've loaded the draw the way they have here in this one, and it stands out to me, as I said before, as the first one where it's like, that's a loaded draw. Like, they will get the 16 teams they want. Bar Australia, I'd say, they'd get them through, all right? And what happens then is that you'll ask a question like, how did they not win the World Cup? But what happens is you don't get any freak results, so you don't get any wild cards going into the second round that might pull off a shock and go out, oh, yeah, Cameroon in 1990. Do you know what I mean? So you end up facing really good teams a lot, probably a round earlier than you would hope for when they load the draw. It's just to look at the draw then, you know, the kind of way.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about Germans. They get 9 points. They did something different in this World Cup. They opened the World Cup. Normally it's the holders who open with that, but they opened it with a 4-2 win over Costa Rica. And the reason I remember this is because this is the goal that Philipp Lahm cuts in and bangs one into the top corner.
Yeah.
And it was Jürgen Klinsmann was the manager. They didn't have to qualify. Did they have to? No, they didn't have to qualify. I think it's one of the last World Cups where the hosts don't have to qualify. And he pings in an absolute world.
The hosts don't have to qualify, do they?
The holders do, is it?
But no, it's the holders you're talking about, Phil.
No, I think the change is that the hosts have to qualify these days as well.
You can't be doing that.
Can you not
know? No, you can't be saying, listen, lads, here's the World Cup. Like, that'd be like going to bleeding, you know, Mongolia and saying, listen, would you build a load of stadiums there for the World Cup? Yeah. Well, you're not in it because you're not very good. Do you know what I mean? You can't be doing that to them.
Well, if it was Qatar, you could, couldn't it?
Well, no, I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But no, I know what you're saying. It's one of the last World Cups where the holders had to qualify.
Yeah.
One of the things about this German squad was it was a move to younger players. I know he'd said after the 2002 World Cup that it sort of ripped up the rule book there. Their squad was very old. Now, there's still a couple of experienced guys in here, but you've got the emergence of Philipp Lahm, you've Bastian Schweinsteiger, Lukas Podolski had all come into the team around this time, and gave them a bit more impetus as well. You know, there was a bit more verve about Germany that they didn't quite do it in this one, but you could see them building up.
There's a couple of things. The Germans are trying to figure out how do we maintain our sort of global dominance in this. But you also have, this is the one, Ballack is at the peak of his career as well. And he's top. Now, if anybody watches back those games, watch the German games.
Ballack's
and watch
Ballack.
He's just amazing to watch. The way he graced around the pitch, he's a bit like, he always reminded me of the player that's sort of in between an Alonso and a Zidane. Do you know that type of player where he was as comfortable picking out passes at the bottom of the midfield as he was gliding through the midfield and finding space to crack a shot off?
He was the player for me that the English tried to build up so many of their players to be. You know what I mean? And what I mean by that is, Ballack could sit at the, like you said, at the base of the midfield and spray passes around. He could get involved a little bit further up, but he was brilliant at arriving late in the box. Yeah. And he was fucking deadly in the air. If it went in there, it didn't matter. I'd put it to this way. We look at Virgil van Dijk dominating in the air now. Ballack could give him a good run for his money because he just arrived. He had a brilliant leap, and not only a brilliant leap, he was just unreal at heading the ball.
And very big as well.
You hear about these, like Paul Scholes, Lampard's, and they say, oh, he gets in the box and he arrives late. He didn't. He was fucking standing there. Ballack was brilliant at it. He just arrived in shot and he was just all over the shop.
That's a great point you make there, Gav, because he is literally like all the English midfielders at that time. He done what Gerrard done. He done what Beckham could do. He done what Lampard could do, Scholes could do. He done all of that.
He was an exceptional footballer.
You know, he really was, and he doesn't get the credit or the recognition maybe that he deserves even now. I think his time at Chelsea taints him a bit in the Premier League, you know what I mean? But he was an absolute baller back then.
He was
picking up that team, and as I said, laying foundations for what was to come with them.
You've also got a 21-year-old Bastian Schweinsteiger now in this squad. Now, it's mad when
he's a winger.
Yeah, he would have been a winger at that stage.
Yeah,
and again, he's that unit that's moving. Like, the one thing about this German side, when you look through it, they're all units, right? The outside of maybe Oliver Neuville, who was referred to as a rat in the last podcast, the rest of them are all joints of men. Right, even Podolski is 6 foot plus. Like when you go against the German side, you're looking up to these lads. Isn't Mertesacker's playing for them? Mertesacker's a kid as well. He's only 21, and I don't think of Mertesacker as being a young person. I just think of him
hanging around with Arsene Wenger for the crack. You know, like he was just, are you still fucking here? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. At the back end of his career at Arsenal, but yeah, he was young. But like you said, it wasn't that they were only tall. They were physically imposing as well. Like Podolski was built like a brick shit house, and he was lightning as well. You know what I mean?
Quick,
and
strong.
He had the whole, didn't he have the whole thing about born in Austria and stuff like that? I think that comes up in a later Euros where I think Austria faced Germany and Podolski's playing against us.
What was it? Was it not where Poland is? Is he not Polish?
Poland.
Where him and Klose are up.
And there's a big thing made
of where Polish.
Yeah, there was a big.
He plays. They beat Poland 1-0 in this game, and did Podolski score in that game?
Oliver Neuwen, Rafa's himself.
What's the issue with Oliver Neuville?
Shawnee thought he looked like a rat, a little slave.
Oh right, so it's not a personal thing. It's just it's an optic thing. Okay, sound.
Just it's a Larson show.
Yeah,
it's like a rat.
Yeah,
you know
that fella.
Yeah. But look, to wrap up the group review, because I just can't, like as I said, the tournament really gets started. May as well talk about England. So it is another golden generation side, right? This is the Paul Robinson World Cup, and isn't this the one where Eriksen is trying to figure out how to shoehorn Gerrard and Lampard into the centre midfield? In their opening game, he plays Hargreaves at right back, and he has Carrick, Lampard and Gerrard in the middle, and Rooney playing up top on his own.
The opening game is...
Is that not the one against Ecuador?
Sorry, of the knockouts. Yeah, sorry, I thought you meant England's opening game in the World Cup.
Sorry, I was looking ahead to the knockouts. What was it? The first game was against Paraguay. Actually, did he not? He couldn't. Was he start? No, he started Gerrard in the fourth game. Did he dropped Gerrard in the second game? Didn't he? Or third game?
Let's see.
I don't know, Gerrard, but it is the stage.
No, Gerrard played second as well. Lampard, Gerrard, Beckham, and Cole is the midfield.
But this all comes around. Around from 2002 onwards, where he's trying to get all these players into the one team, going back to the likes of Scholes and it goes back to Scholes, Gerrard, Lampard. That's the big thing in 2002, I think. But even going back further to, was it 98 and Hoddle? And Hoddle's trying to play Scholes out of position. There's all sorts of messing going on. But this is the problem for England. You have a brilliant squad, but he doesn't see it as a squad. He sees it as, I have to get this team on the pitch. Instead of just going, listen, we're going to run. Instead of just saying, listen, Frank Lampard, you're not fucking playing. All right? And what we're going to do is we're going to run, whether it's Ecuador or Paraguay or Sweden, we're going to run them into the fucking ground. And you're going to come on after 70 for Gerrard, who'll get a nice little rest going into the next game, and you can just go mental. And everything will be great. They didn't see it like that. What they seen was they bowed to the media pressure of all these players have to play. Do you know what I mean? And that's our downfall all the fucking time. Like when you're looking at them Germany teams, you're looking at Argentina, Brazil, they don't give a shit if one of them's on the bench. Yeah. You know, like I put it to this way, if Lionel Messi was English going into that, Lionel Messi would have started every game for England, played every fucking minute, and they didn't care who was out of the team for him because he has to play. These players have to play. And that's where England's downfall is again. Now, it's 2006. Gerrard's at the height of his power. Now, people will argue that, you know, come 08-09, he's brilliant behind Torres and stuff like that. But at this time, Gerrard is going around like European Cup winner. He wins an FA Cup on his own, not a month before. Do you know what I mean? He literally wins an FA Cup on his own. You have got Lampard there. You have got great players there. But as a squad, he should have went, listen, I'm sorry, but this three doesn't go into two. And I'm just going to. It's like Ferguson done for years. He used to tell players, you're not playing in October, but you will play in November. And I planned this out, and I'll show it to you. But the media got on top of this again, and everyone had to play. And then, like you said, you're looking at, we're going to play three at the back, and we're going to do Owen Hargreaves at right wing back because we want to get these three in midfield. Madness, yeah. As always, with the English.
At this stage, I think Sven was too pally with a lot of that squad. I just touched on earlier, he'd been around a while, he'd been to a few tournaments. And I think there was a staleness maybe with them at this stage. And it was more of a, what I personally felt, and anyway, I'm not saying it definitely was, but it was very clicky, you know, at that stage. The English setup was, the boys just all rock in, and I'm looking at their team, and it's, you know, it's all who you'd expect, but you've Carragher playing at right back against Sweden with Ferdinand, Terry, Ashley Cole.
Was Neville injured?
Neville,
I think was
Carragher was at right back in
Well, like, two of the games.
Yeah,
two
well, like, and then when you look, like we go forward into the Ecuador game, like he does have Hargreaves at right back. He's Ferdinand and Terry Cole. Then he has Carrick, Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard, Joe Cole as a midfield five with Rooney up front on his own. But there you go again. He's playing a 4-5-1 in a World Cup against fucking Ecuador because he has to get these players in the team.
But Gav, was this the one where Rooney goes in injured with some injury or something? Like,
no,
like
this is the one where Rooney gets sent off the whole thing around Ronaldo. I think it was the 2010 World Cup. Rooney has the metatarsal problem, isn't it?
No, that was one of the Europeans.
It might have been 2012 or whatever. It's a later tournament. But
yeah, because he was. I think it was the one. I think it was the tournament previous to this, 2004, the Europeans in 2000. Because Rooney was only breaking onto the scene and was seen as this wonder kid going in, and Portugal had Ronaldo. Because it doesn't end up a Portugal Greece final and Greece win it. Yeah. But I think that Rooney was meant to go in and blow that tournament away. And doesn't he break his foot the last game of the season or something like that?
No. Rooney goes into 2004. Brilliant, and he's top. He might end up top scorer in the competition. He runs amok, but Zidane does England in a knockout, doesn't he? In 2004, going into 2006, was it the metatarsal? I don't think it is, because I think Rooney ends up one of the top scorers in this tournament. So I think it's later on where he has the issue, and there's a whole thing around. It's not 2008 because they're not in that tournament. I have a feeling it's South Africa 2010.
But this is a tournament where there isn't a convincing performance in that group stage, by the way, because they scrape through against Paraguay. Do you remember they get a nog early in the first game. The second game, Crouch and Gerrard score within the last 10 minutes against Trinidad, and they've been so speaking down about Trinidad, because they had Shaka Hislop, they had Dwight York, they had Kenwyn Jones at that stage, was Stern John, they had players that were playing sort of in around the bottom end of the Premier League, and they were just brushing Trinidad and Tobago aside, and then all of a sudden they basically struggled to beat them on that day, and then they go into the last game against Sweden, and for whatever reason Sweden just have a hex over England normally, especially in tournaments, and that finishes up a 2-2 draw. Now I think they qualified by winning the two previous games. They had 6 points, so they weren't going to be caught, and they might have rested a few players in that match, but then they ended up having to call on the players to come on again. Gerrard comes on, Saul Campbell comes on, Crouch comes on. And Gerrard thinks he scored the winner in the 85th minute, but Larsson pops up then right at the end, the 90th, to get an equaliser.
Isn't this the one where Owen does his injury in one of the games against Sweden? And
was it
competition?
That?
Yeah, it is. He's playing against Sweden. And he breaks it. He breaks his toe, I think.
Was this not the horrible knee injury where he goes to torn?
No, I thought he gets stamped on. Or maybe it's the knee. He goes down under the knee and he's out of the competition. He's gone. Owen is gone after the second game, I think it might have been, in the tournament. So that rules him out. But again, it just shows they're just trying to get players into this team that the media feel the players should be in. Do you know what I mean?
And that's the twist in the injury. I just looked at it there. It's the twist in the injury where he goes to torn. Do you remember? And
he's on the sideline. I remember.
Yeah.
I remember.
And his leg is gone. That's what happens there.
Yeah.
I think that's the end of Michael Owen at that stage, to be fair.
Some cars are comfy on the inside but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry, before they're all gone.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets deal.
Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's.
Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet Fish y te llevas otro por $1.
Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
Sports Social Podcast Network.